Everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. You're here with me, LaVon. I've got some guests on this evening. We're going to be hearing from the Enchanted Gardener, Leslie Goldman, who is traveling to the National Heirloom Expo. You guys are probably tired of me talking about it. Probably not, though, because it's super awesome. He's already there in Santa Rosa. He's been doing really good work up in the community, especially at the Seed Bank in Petaluma. So we're going to hear all about that. He has connected us with a very special guest, a woman named Laurel Horn, who is either 99 or 98. She's very close to 100 years old. She is going to be calling into our show, bless her, giving us some really awesome real life advice about how important it is to grow your own food. She survived the Depression, and we get a firsthand account through her experience, what it was like existing in that time. A lot of people are saying that we are essentially in a depression now, and I couldn't disagree with that. We're seeing the increase on gas, increase on food prices everywhere. There's drought in a lot of parts of the world. So people are in a depressed state, but because Friday nights we like to balance all the news, we like to think of solutions. So we're going to talk about things we can do to combat the depression, not only actually tangibly, but emotionally too. So Leslie will be calling us very soon. I also wanted to say thank you guys for tuning in. We are here Monday through Friday, same time, same station. We talk about current events. And on Fridays, we try and balance that with practical things for you to do at home. So we got a little something for everybody. And I'm getting really anxious because we've been talking about this National Heirloom Expo for about a month now. And it's approaching. And it's almost time to travel. And I got my press passes in the mail today. So I'm going to be reporting to you guys from the meet and greet, behind the scenes, talking to some keynote speakers. And we're getting our first caller. Let's go ahead and add them here to our program. Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hi, LaVon.
Hi, Mr. Enchanted Gardener. How are you?
I'm really good, and I'm inspired, and I wanted to kick off. Should we be tired of the National Heirloom Expo? I have been driving around these streets here watching development and watching the difference between areas that have old houses that connect us to our past. And I'm becoming increasingly aware within myself the revulsion I have. Like, for instance, you get off Highway 101 and you head down Washington Street and you see FedEx, you see Jack in the Box. Then all of a sudden, within about a quarter mile, you see this edifice, this unbelievable bank that's been in existence for well over 125 years. And all of a sudden, my spirit lifts. And then the contrast between the way we are growing, developing, planting, architecting, herding people into a lifestyle versus what I'm seeing on those shelves in that bank, which is the heritage of cultures from around the world, just waiting for us to grab up those heirloom original seeds and turn them into industries that youthful people can do with seeds. Does that make any sense? The contrast? I mean, I'm so touched by how it feels to be in a city like Santa Rosa, or even more so Sebastopol, where a man by the name of Luther Burbank came because the place where you could grow food 12 months of the year. And I watched people harvesting a Gravenstein apple tree the other day that he planted, a man of vision, a man who knew how what kids need and how kids grow plant-like. And I'm just contrasting that with my sensory experience of the monocultures and the farms even here that I see of one kind of crop. It's almost like we're being herded by media, by lifestyle, by things in a direction that is so contrary to so contrary to what would be a sustainable life. And it's really incredible to be able to talk to someone like an elder, hopefully she'll call in about 8:15, Lori Horn, who I met at this Luther Burbank Experiment Farm in Sebastopol. Here's somebody that was right there watching as this man of vision planted trees, was planting the future that's for us as people today and as young people to pick up on what was he saying, what was the wisdom. And hopefully if Lori calls in, she was there. She understands how people coming together can create, like they regenerated and brought back to life this Luther Burbank place that was half burned out and half overgrown. And by people cooperating and working together, they created something that you and I could walk in and hear a path to the future. It's just totally amazing to be in a city that there's still remnants and people that are upholding a lifestyle that, as I see, is the path towards sustainability versus a path that's a dead-end path that most of us are walking when we're living in the city. And give me some reflections on that, Levon.
Well, first of all, thank you for what you're doing, Leslie. It's really important. And I know it hasn't been easy for you. So I wanted to commend you and recognize your efforts because they're pretty immense. And so this is my little applause to that. I'm glad you're feeling better. I know that your body was a little tired because you've been doing so much. It's important that you bring up Luther Burbank. You and I had talked about him before because I know that he's very inspiring to you. And his teaching has been resonating with me, especially the aspect in regards to children. And I think his vision for the way children need to grow up is, it's so ideal and it's so encompassing of all sorts of demographics. And you shared that with my son and it was impacting upon him as well. He's only 7. So if you could touch on that, that would be awesome. And it's great that people are sharing his vision. You know, he had a dream like we do. Everybody has a dream, right? And it's thriving and it's living. And I think that's important that, you know, we can sustain if we put our energy in the right places. You know, we can plant things that are keeping people alive for generations. We just got to work together. Like you said, these people in this town rebuilt his farm and they're using it to sustain. That's awesome. And tell me more about the seed bank. What's going on there?
Okay, well, let me pick up what you just said about Luther Burbank. Luther, if you go to the store today and eat something like a plum, some of the plums, this is a man through his genius who developed all kinds of foods that we take for granted today that never existed before. He took various kinds of original foods and, working with, in harmony with nature, created new foods like the Santa Rosa plum or the spineless cactus. It's just amazing what happens if we actually live in harmony with nature. And then and so Luther Burbank had two places, one in Santa Rosa, where you could visit his home and garden. And every year I'd buy a T-shirt there. I visit that today. And then you have his experiment farm in Sebastopol, where he was growing and doing all his plant experiments. So there are actually volunteers who are seeking more volunteers at the Sebastopol place. If you end up coming on Wednesday of every week, these elders get together, people that are remnants of a lifestyle that is so quickly disappearing. And Luther Burbank, this was his place. This is where he did his plant experiments. Just like the people listening, they could create, even growing in one pot, taking some seeds. Like, I really feel this is the time to restart, to push the restart button on what we're doing for the earth. And that's gratefully Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company, which their western headquarters is the Petaluma Seed Bank. That's that this old bank building with ceilings as high as a cathedral and a vault where they store a special rare seeds. But the whole building's still filled with rare seeds. Yesterday, LaVon, I collected 18 different kinds of beets.
Can you imagine that? That's so
18,
awesome.
18 varieties of beets. You know how much I play with the idea of keep the beet and the beekeepers and beekeepers return, you know, as a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
18 kinds.
That's amazing.
And Baker Creek was started by a teenager who I interviewed yesterday.
Oh, that's so cool.
Who started this National Heirloom Expo. And the National Heirloom Expo, it turns out I'm going to be on stage two times for 10 minutes. One, the opening night, Tuesday, September 8th, and I'm going to speak about the pure food revolution begins now. And I'm on right before Vedana Shiva, who's an international food saver. And then on the final night, I have another 10 minutes where I'm going to talk about this earth is ours, so plant your dream. And that's also right before Vedana and right after Aaron Stevens from Nature's Path and Jeremy Seifer, who did the film GMO, OMG, is going to be there. And actually, he's bringing his son Finn, who's in the movie and says, who since he's been 3 years old has wanted to collect all the seeds of the world. He kind of got this bug. And I'm looking forward to interviewing Jeremy Seifer's son, Finn, and giving him the Plant Your Dream kit. So it all kind of is tying together like that, seeing these contrasts of worlds. And if Lori calls Ben, she was right there playing as a kid. Since the time she was about 2 years old, she was playing in this the remains of Luther Burbank's ground, and her kids played there. And somehow people together, rather being anti, they got together and rebuilt this place. And you know how lots of times, LaVon, old people end up being stuck in high rises, and they call that ending their years. Mm. You know, you talk about that. On this property, I stepped on it, on the property, and I noticed that the wife of Luther Burbank dedicated acres to low housing senior living. Oh. And all these people have community gardens, and or they can, or they can work as volunteers at this nearby Luther Burbank place. Can you imagine that?
That sounds like a paradise for, we got to take care of our elders, and what better way?
Yeah, and like if when Lori calls, hopefully she'll call. I already taped her and recorded her some, and I recorded one of her schoolmates, Frederick Bollinger, who basically she went to grammar school with in Sebastopol as well. And she knew him from elementary school, this other gentleman who met Luther Burbank. But, you know, we need to be the Luther Burbanks of today, LaVon, just like you are with your kid. And the book that I was referring to, that Cameron, your son, or pronounce his name for me, is it Camden?
Cameron.
Cameron. You know, the book that I read him, was from called The Training of the Human Plant, 1907, and it's free online. And it talks about how kids do their best growing up in nature, and it's best not to stuff kids or young people with idle facts before a certain age. Just let them roam wild, barefoot in nature, you know, with all the bats and bees and butterflies and rocks to roll and things like that. So that book, The Training of the Human Plant by Luther Burbank, is free, and you can read what he said, what Luther Burbank said online. You could look that up, The Training of the Human Plant. That was one of his, the books that I've become familiar with. But it's really something, LaVon, to see firsthand the power between a community. A lot of people in Sebastopol are like retired hippies, it seems like, and people still holding on to a way of gardening and farming that inspires you and I and Mo and Eva and some of the ones that of our friends, versus the development where things like trees are not important. People completing the cycle isn't important. Stuffing people into condominiums is the way, and making profits off of people as if we're here to be herded like a lifestyle where we just produce, pay taxes, and get sick and do something. There's still remnants, and it's all going to be at the National Heirloom Expo. That's why I would drive a 68 VW van with personal health problems, not even sure if I can come. That's why I would drive my 68 VW van, the Enchanted Garden of Bill, all the way up here, because I so want to see those people that see the van as I'm driving by and give me the peace sign or say, I like your van, and then that opens up a conversation.
So, yeah. And I know that you've been traveling in giving out ancient Kalmut wheat, and how have people been responding to that, and how many people have you got to join your garden club?
Well, it's taken me a while just to get situated in my own self. I would say I've planted with that pot, the same pot where you planted your dream, and then it rained the next hours and the next for 2 days. I'd say I planted about 15 quality seeds in that pot, and including some of the dreams of, you know, and everybody could start a pot. So I started one new pot that's in the Petaluma seed bank that I left yesterday. I just started an album on my Facebook page, Leslie Goldman, Your Enchanted Gardener, where you can see a picture of 35-year-old Jer Gettle planting a dream with Paul Wallace. And so I would say the campaign is just kicking off. It'll probably just kick off at the Heirloom Expo. I've been pretty I haven't been that liberal in handing out the seed packets. I've been giving them to gifts with to different people. You know, I'm going to speak before the city council of the city of Sebastopol on Tuesday night. I gave some of the flyers, and I've handed out about maybe 30 or 40 because I want to make sure that people understand what they're doing and set up the pots themselves and just that they just don't end up like seeds on a shelf someplace, you know?
Okay. I'm really curious, Leslie, as a gardener, what type of soil do you recommend? And this is a question I get the most from people who are overwhelmed with the idea of gardening because they understand that the plants get their nutrients from the soil. So how do you put the ideal nutrients into the soil, in your opinion?
Well, I would say building soil is as important as some of the other things we know, such as composting. You know, I feel it's like incredible when you take the remnants of the things we eat and make sure it gets back into a bucket where either worms can eat it or make compost out of it. But for beginners, I went into one store yesterday here, and they had the favorite soil that I get from City Farm and Nursery in San Diego, which is I personally like the Fox Farm potting soil. It's about $11 for a big bag, but that just kind of gives you a sense of how valuable soil is that has things like bat, guana, and the richest things from the ocean and the land. I would say Fox Farm is a good one, and I do believe my friend Bill Tall at City Farm and Nursery, for those in San Diego, has a potting mix, or go to an organic nursery where you live and see if you can score some the best soil that's possible, that's organic, that has compost and rich nutrients in it. Probably any organic or many nurseries have some kind of organic potting soil mix. I would suggest that. And of course, my tip is start small. If you've never grown anything, just grow some food in a pot and grow some seeds with intention, like you could get some of the starter kit with the ancient wheat that I'm making available on my website. Just Google Winning Back Our Sacred Seeds, and you can see it on Plant Your Dream. You can even make a little donation if you want, enough to cover some mailing costs, and we'll send you out one either before long. And you could have one of these, one of the 5,000 that Baker Creek produced. But I would say we're now, as of tomorrow, we'll be 10 days away from the National Heirloom Expo. And the third day is called Kids Day, and hundreds of kids will show up. And I'll probably be handing out a lot of the seeds, the starter kit there, and to different people at the expo. That'll probably be the place where I feel confident and organized enough from the journey to give numbers of those seeds away. But does that answer your question about the soil, Levon?
I think it does. And people get so overwhelmed with the notion of building soil, but you literally, if you plant the seed, it will grow. You'll figure it out as you go. Don't overanalyze it. I got inspired to garden since I was a child, but I didn't feel compelled to do it in my adult life until about 2010. And I didn't actually plant a seed because I was overanalyzing everything. I didn't actually plant a seed until 2 years later. Like, I thought I had to build a perfect box. So I built this 12-foot 4x4 box, and I did square foot gardening and companion planting. But it just, I thought I had to do it a certain way, and you don't. You can grow things on your counter. You can grow things in recycled containers with proper ventilation, and you can make it work. You just got to plant a seed. So I'm very excited about the Heirloom Expo too. I got my passes in the mail today, so I'm hoping to be there on Wednesday morning. So
Wednesday morning, you mean the second day of the event?
They invited me to the press conference. I was told that the press conference was on Wednesday at 9:30.
Yeah.
But that's on the 9th. So I'm going to be there Tuesday. I apologize.
Okay, when would you plan to arrive?
That's on the table. But what I was going to say is I would really like to go to the event you were talking about on Wednesday.
Oh, well, those volunteers, they're actually going to be at the expo.
Okay.
They're going to have a table there. There's going to be all kinds of groups. You know, you talk about investing in the things we believe in. Maybe on next week's show, we can create an interview with Adam Johnson. I spent time with Adam today. First of all, Adam traveled for 3 years out of college studying the ferment. Now, what is he doing now? When I met him at the National Heirloom Expo last year, and my friend Nadine was the first one to be drawn to him, he was my introduction to fermented foods. He had the classiest act serving and selling glass bottles of beet kvass. And there's a whole formula on my website if anybody Googles beet kvass, KVASS, the health benefits. And Adam actually gave me, I was with him today, but he gave me his recipe for making the beet kvass. And they just had a farm to ferment festival up here, just like these festivals are catching on everywhere. There's going to be one in Oregon on September 20th. There's going to be one the same time in Santa Barbara. Fermenting foods is a new, for me, it's another form of gardening, of culture and of building culture. And they're playing with that whole theme. And I was with Adam today. And in 1 year, here's this young man who's 27, and he's about to get in his first local Whole Foods here. And he's got four products, and he's doing his best to figure out. The thing I love about the bottle, it says fermented in Sonoma County. Can you believe that, LaVon? Here's someone who's making a whole industry out of it says life in a bottle. And now he's got four products. One of them is turmeric kvass. One of them is sweet potato kvass. One of them is ginger kvass, and then he's got the beet. And he was micro brewing beer in college, and then he went around the world for 3 years. He was one of those botanical explorers, like we talked about. We interviewed a few weeks ago when I was at the California Rare Fruit Growers. But now he's about to take the next leap, and his drink is going to be at the press conference. So you could meet Adam. But I'm looking at this turmeric kvass that he gave me a bunch of bottles today. And tell us, LaVon, tell us some of the health benefits of turmeric. What do you know about that?
Turmeric's a superfood. It's one of the best natural anti-inflammatories. There's a lot of products mm-hmm. in the market that are derived from turmeric. Like one I know is like curcumin. A lot of people take that for just overall body wellness. Because when your body's inflamed, it causes pain. So anything can be inflamed, and you just want to reduce inflammation in your body. I know that it's a pain reliever as well. If people have reported lower cholesterol. It kills bacteria. It's just a wonderful food, and it's high in a certain vitamin that eludes me at this time. I apologize. But you can't go wrong. You can put it in so many different things. I'm glad to hear that. That's what's so inspiring, Leslie, and that's why I get so excited about sharing seeds with people, is because you plant a seed, and from it you grow a plant, right? And then you get fruit. And just the notion of growing that food creates so many other industries within it, so many sub-products of the product. And you could really support a community with a garden, and beyond just cooking it. People are getting really creative, and it's exciting. And myself included, you know, I've been thinking of really intriguing things to do with food. So I've been working on that myself. So I'm hoping to share some of those things with people as I formulate, because you can create so many different medicines with food, and turmeric's just one thing.
Yeah, and like for instance, this turmeric kvass, it's got a delightful yellow glow to it. I'm opening the bottle now to have a toast with you and the listeners. But, you know, I've had arthritis since I was in my teenage years. And here's turmeric, a product that Adam is saying, okay, who wants to make a livelihood? Experiment with growing turmeric in California. If you can grow turmeric, there's an endless market with Adam and the people who are getting into fermenting. And unlike companies like Monsanto, who want to patent things, here I'm meeting these people at the California Rare Fruit Growers who are inventing forms of food. They are so committed to open pollinated, which means the seed reproduces, or ideas like Adam. He's happy making his livelihood in Sonoma County. You, Levon, and people listening, you could be the beet kvass grower in your county. You could replicate the open pollinated dream of someone like Adam Johnstone, which you can read about on my blog. Maybe you could put that link up, Levon, health benefits of beet kvass. You know, and I wrote something like cornering the beet kvass market in Sonoma. I was just playing with him. But he's an indicator of the quality of class act young people that are making whole livelihoods out of pickles or sauerkraut or, you know, and Levon, I almost played hooky from the show tonight, because I was so inspired to take Occidental Drive up to the Occidental Farmers Market, the one I described last week. It was like a little hobbit land. And when I'm discovering they have farmers markets here, Levon, like the Sunday Sebastopol Market, can you imagine when the market's closed, the people start playing drums and they just hang out in the park and create community, and that's what they do on Friday in Occidental. What does that sound like to you, people that just don't go to the farmer's market to buy food, but go there because it's like the town square, and they want to get together with one another and hang out for hours and have fun? Give me some feedback.
Well, it sounds like something I've imagined before. I've talked about on this program before. Wouldn't it be so cool if you had a place that you could go to where you had resources available to you from real people in your community, and you built relationships with them, and you had a network of individuals who could support all the things that you need, and you did so like collectively? In theory, for what you're describing, like, it sounds like people could create such an environment It blows my mind because, you know, we go to these grocery stores where everything's packaged and covered in wax and full of chemicals, and it's processed and it's lost all of its integrity, and it's not alive like the kvass, or it doesn't have any probiotics or anti-inflammatory properties. It's different. And people don't talk to each other, and they're in a rush to go in, get out, go back to their caves. And that's not living. That's kind of just doing, that's not being. And we need to interact with each other. We don't talk to each other enough, not face to face. And I've seen it grow here in my own city too. Farmers markets are becoming abundant and they're packed. You used to go and you could push a stroller, no problem. It's different, And we are kind of caught in the two paradigms. I feel like a lot of people want real food because they realize how important it is to their wellness. Did you know, Leslie, that every 28 days, literally every single cell within your body is new based on what you ate for those 28 days?
Well, Levon, I'm having a toast right now of Tumor Kvass to me, you, and the listeners. It's got a fizz to it. I could imagine this being the new bar scene drink of the year.
Would be cool. You bring
we go into bars and
we poison ourselves.
And it's, what do you think?
You're onto something there, Leslie, because we can create a fermented beverage that has an alcohol content that gives us that euphoric feeling that people are after, right? But imagine doing so and giving your body good flora, good bacteria, good vitamins, good nutrients. Like we should have some awesome kombucha bars where adults could go dance and do all the fun things they like to do with alcohol. But instead, it should be fermented beverages made from vegetables. So, let's do it.
Yeah. So Adam was telling me today that among his generation, you're talking these farmers markets here. These young people are discovering one ferment after another from cultures around the world, and they're making whole industries out of that. And here you've got the hotbed of fermentation and creative thinking among these young people. But, I'm concerned, the old farmers are dying. They sell the land to be able to live in their dying years. They haven't figured out that maybe they should invite the young people onto their land rather than sell the farm. Then the farms get turned into more corporate takeover, as opposed to some of these young people that are so delightful to meet, and I'm meeting them here at the market, and you could see some of my Facebook albums now on Leslie Goldman, your Enchanted Gardener, on Facebook, but you could see, wow, the quality of foods and the whole lifestyle of this, it's like so yummy, Levon. It's like these young people are discovering one ferment after another
It's important to note that people have been fermenting foods for a really long time. We're not going to go into the entire history of fermentation, but it's a process that many cultures from around the world use to not only preserve food, but aid in their health. So it's really, like you're saying, it's really inspiring that young people are involved in it via their own efforts. But if we could create a system where people are learning this as a skill, why aren't we taught this in school, Leslie? Like, why aren't we all taught how to grow our own food? Like, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it goes back to this thing. When I'm driving down the street here and seeing some redwood trees or somebody has a goat in their backyard, I would say we're not taught to grow our own food, and we're taught to to become a sharpened pencil and get a college degree to serve something that is basically an end game that's not sustainable. A lot of the people I was running who already had college degrees, and then they were going back to San Diego or San Diego City College when it had its farm program. And, of course, Paul Moshka, who is the teacher there now, is doing the farm school at Wild Willow Farm. And people like, there needs to be farm schools every place where people could really get an education. I don't think it serves the corporate people who are the handful. What do they want people to grow their own food for? They might get too intelligent. They might break free of the couch potato syndrome. They might throw away their TV set. I found a new
systems might be better.
I found
sick less, which is really important.
What, huh?
I said, imagine if their immune systems were better and they got less illnesses.
Yeah, I mean, if we got less illnesses, that wouldn't be good for the gross national product. If you can eat some of the nice pizzas from Caesar or whoever for $5 rather than to grow a healthier pizza out of Kamu, you could support the gross national product by getting your degree of cold and every year. And of course, you know, when people come to a new area like this, I've had a cold because people bring in new kinds of evolutionary shifting viruses and bacteria and start exchanging them, like all the people from Missouri that are coming out to help put together. But I would say, in answer to your question, it doesn't serve the corporate world that is on its last leg to have people like Levon Anti-Media discovering with their listeners that it's time for them to not only know what's in their food, but to have the know-how to grow some of their own food. You're dangerous, Levon. You might become a radical food grower who attends the National Heirloom Expo and gets so inspired because you figured out how to get up here. You could become dangerous to the whole media world by being Levon, the anti-media hostess. I mean, just think of some of the people you'd be interacting with up here. You know, all the GMO leaders and the Ghana Shiva. And, you know, look at the, just Google National Heirloom Expo speakers.
Oh, I know, Leslie. I'm losing sleep. We're 10 days away. I'm really excited. Receiving my package in the mail today, and I've been corresponding with the people who run the Heirloom Expo. So they're really excited that we're going to be there. They love the anti-media. They want to build a community with us. So that's what's important here is. I'm attending this expo with the intention of building a network of comrades to help me change the world. I want my children and people's children from generations on to live in a different world than I do, where they can walk around and they can just eat. Like, imagine, Leslie, if people didn't have to worry about food. They wouldn't spend their days working a mindless job, you know, because that eats away at you over time. People are living lives where they just like machines. They go and do this job, then they sit in traffic there and back. They spend a little time or effort cooking food or not, mostly not cooking food. You know, the food's not the center of their day. Working is. What if you spent your day like cultivating food and creating food, being made of that delicious food? Then essentially you're different, right, on a cellular level, you're changed, you're better, then what can you create as a result of that? Like you're essentially taking back your life. Your hours spent doing a mundane job to make money to buy food could be transmuted into you being made of awesome food for essentially free, right? Grown by your community, and then spending your life doing whatever you want, whatever is important to you or in your heart. And that's the bigger picture for me, is I want that freedom for people.
Well, that's beautiful. And let me tell you what happened. This show, could you probably use about 500 or more volunteers to arrive early and stay late. You know, they bring out their crew from Missouri, but you would not believe what this pure, a world's pure food fair looks like. It's like for 3 days, people are in beautiful weather conditions at a true agricultural fair with a heritage animals and sheep and goats and horses and places from around the world and all these seed companies and all these creative vendors and all these delightful people that you want to know, and they have like a seed swap. But what's fun is, can you imagine how much food is left over? I mean, they build like a pyramid of squashes. It's like I've got one YouTube. I hope you could put the link up, Levon. There's an interview I did with Jared Gettle last year or the year before, where when I saw, they spend days setting up this hall. And, you know, they go out and grow truckloads and truckloads of food. It's like, oh, my gosh, there's like more food that comes together at the World Food Fair than a person. And you know, at the end.
Paul, I'm hoping that this is our guest. Hold on 1 second, okay? Let's see here. Oh, they stopped calling in. Oh, I was excited. I apologize. Go ahead, Leslie. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, they, our dear Lori, I'm not too sure what happened, but we could talk a little bit about her and because I already did take. Did you talk to her today?
I didn't, but I want you to, you were saying that the Heirloom Expo could use volunteers and it would be a great benefit to people because there's to meet and experience with.
Yeah, to help with the setup and help with the teardown. It's like they tear down and set up for 3 or 4 days after, and everybody just pitches in, and there is like squash genetic diversity. Like if you look at my YouTube where I'm interviewing Jared Gettle, you could find it on my channel, my YouTube, me and Jared. I mean, my God, it's like the United Nations of squash. It's like squash that never saw one another. One from Yugoslavia, one from Russia, one from Siberia, mm-hmm. one from Colombia, one from... There are so many foods, like Joseph Simcox was telling us. There are so many species of squash and genetic diversity of foods that have never seen themselves. And here they are, like...
like a United Nations thing, but with food. It's a montage of the world. Like literally, it's United Nations of food. It's only its fifth year. I can't imagine, like, as people get more and more excited about what they're made of, how this event's going to grow and change. Like, I really feel like we're at the forefront of something like revolutionary. Like you were saying, Leslie, like, I'm dangerous. People who grow food are dangerous because we challenge the system. In every sense,
yeah.
It is the ultimate way to take back your power. It really is.
Well, you heard my message at tell again my message that you heard when I spoke again, you know, at the March Against Monsanto. And I remember what I said about, in other words, march towards your dream rather than just spending all your beautiful, youthful energy trying to tear down a system that can't stand anyway, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you want to work towards something, not against. Like, if you focus all your energy on the old, you're never going to create the new. So that's part of what we do in this program too, is we want to inspire people to be their best, and whatever that is for them, so be it. But people deserve to be their best. And I think food crosses all barriers. And you often say we're all rare seeds, Leslie. And it's true. That's such a beautiful metaphor for people, is we are all rare seeds. We all grow into some beautiful, magnificent plant that is a one of lots of species, but they're all part of the same kingdom, right? But we don't know what kind of plant we're going to be until we thrive. But what do people need to thrive? And a lot of people argue over what's wrong with the world. And people argue about religion and government and vaccines and all kinds of things. But food literally is our sustenance. What are we made of? That crosses all barriers. All stigmas are removed, and you get a wide demographic, globally. Think locally, act globally. That's how we can change the world. And I'm so excited about the food festival. That's why I've literally been talking about it every Friday for weeks, is because it is very important. It's going to change the world. It already has, and it can only get bigger and better. And I can't wait to meet all these different foods.
It'll change our lives. And, I'm staying with, Jonathan and Rachel in this condominium complex that I'd love to inspire to have a community garden here. But I want to make sure people know, if they Google the Enchanted Garden Mobile's journey to win back our sacred seed, they will find that on the Plant Your Dream blog. And also on my Facebook page, I've already recorded Lori, who we were hoping was going to call in. I'm sure I'll see her again, and we'll find out about that, I had hoped she'd call in tonight. But I noticed someone in your family wrote a piece called My Life at Fort Ross, 1877 to 1907. And that might have been her or a relative, but I was very moved by the opening of this. It talks about, her memories. And I just want to underscore that point, that taking a stand on environments where people can really live, houses, old houses made out of wood versus, as best we can, figuring out how we can live in a way that would be sustainable. And if she got on the show tonight, I know she would have talked about her life on the farm.
We'll have to connect with her again. We definitely will.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I have a kind of controversial topic to bring up for you that you may or may not agree with, and I'm neutral about it. But what do you think about people living communities and sharing duties, like as a one big family? I know a lot of people, since same-sex marriage has been legalized, have been questioning why polyamorous relationships aren't legal. And their main argument is that people should be able to live legally in communities, and if they want to do so as partners, legally with certificates and such. And, you don't have to touch on that if you don't want to. But what do you think that it's impractical, the way that we try and raise our children and the conventional lifestyles in general? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Okay. I tried for decades to hold on to this land in San Diego that I called an intentional community. And to live with people, you really have to have certain kinds of bonds that are stronger than just renting rooms. But it's definitely a full-time job. Like, I tried my best to hold on to this property near San Diego State that I call the Enchanted Garden Intensive Community. But I don't know. You know, I think it's something that you have to be young and you have to be willing. It's living together with other people. In this, it's like two people in this country can hardly live together without getting a divorce. And then you talk about me as an example, trying to hold on to a property, a third of an acre, that requires so many people to work together. I personally have graduated from beyond that. It's something I need to either turn over to some young people or move on to another way of love on. You know, I've outgrown it myself. But I've looked into that. I have friends who are leaders in the polyamory way of life, and they sometimes I admire them very much, you know, for they always seem to be in a constant state of joy of one kind or another. But there are whole workshops, you know, ZEG and community building that's popular up here. And I would say it's one time I went to the International Intentional Communities Conference, and there was like communities of women that lived together and had certain practices that I thought were very, very special. Women practices that I thought were incredible. There were, I think this whole idea of intentional community living continues to be something that needs to be explored. But let me just say, it's a full-time job. And as you know, as well as I do, being in a relationship with just another person is a big deal. And you can get a nervous breakdown from attempting to make it work and in the dynamic of loving more than one partner. It just can get crazy making, or it can get paradise. You know, we had the loss of one of the great. I met the lady who wrote that beautiful, beautiful book on love. You know, she just died this last week. I met her at the Intentional Communities Conference in Olympia, Washington, decades ago. Deborah Annapol, I believe her name was. She just died. And she has a beautiful book about loving in that open manner. And then we have other teachers in that. But I bless anybody who's willing to take a stab at it. There's actually an event in San Diego that I was the main part of called the Whole Being Weekend, which I believe they get together in Julian for a weekend. And there's workshops, and there was always a strong, in recent years, it's outpouring from the Tantra community of San Diego. But called the Whole Being Weekend.
We're out of time for the evening. Thank you so much for catching up with us. We're going to talk soon and start with our guest in Poland, but we had an awesome show. Catch you guys on Monday.
I'ma let them know, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.